Thank you, praise team. This morning I want to talk to you about benevolence. And looking around, we have a few guests, so I want to point out a couple of things. Not only do I want to explore what the Bible says about benevolence, I do want to encourage the members here at GBC and kind of go over what goes on here at GBC in way of benevolence. We normally, on Sunday morning at this time, have verse-by-verse exegesis of the Scripture, and we're currently on 1 Peter, and I know Jim finished 1 Peter 2 this last week, and he'll be starting 1 Peter 3. But this morning we get the opportunity, and I get the opportunity, to talk on a topic that is very important to us as a church. Now, I will say, if you'll open your Bibles to 1 John 3:16 and 18, that's going to be the focus passage. But I want to let you know that I'll be referencing 34 separate passages this morning. And so I don't expect you to try and keep up. The ones I'll actually talk about, I will put up on the screen so that you can follow along. And I only have 25 minutes to do that, not an hour. So we're gonna be moving really fast. So what is benevolence? Some of you may have noticed before that on the second Sunday of the month, when the deacons remember, or I remember, or somebody remembers, we try and drag the benevolence box back there on the back aisle over to the center. Just wanted to point out a couple of things at Grace Bible Church. We don't pass the plate for general offering. We only pass the plate on the third Sundays for collection for the missionaries. Otherwise, the general offering, the church is supported by your offering that you can place on the back wall there. So we have the general offering, we have the mission plate that's passed, and to remind you, the mission box is also on the back wall in case you want to give other than the third Sunday of each month. But then today I want to talk about benevolence and what is benevolence. Like many of you, I wanted to do a word study on benevolence. And like many of you, the first thing I do, I use electronics a lot, which means my Bible sometimes is staring at a computer screen, which makes it easy when you want to do a word study, because you can actually find resources where you can go in and just do a search on the word benevolence. So using the King James Version, I did a search on benevolence, and you might be as surprised as I am how many instances in the King James Version of benevolence you found. I found one. The actual word benevolence, the English word benevolence, I should say, is found one time, and it's in 1 Corinthians 7. It says, "Let the husband render unto wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband." That word is, and I'll see if I can say this right, "yunoia," and it's a root. It comes from the root "yunaio." That was not good. "Yunaio," and so. Those, I thought, oh, okay, there's got to be more instances in the Bible of where that word was used. There is another instance that is translated, and this is interesting and kind of what I want to talk on this morning. It is found in Ephesians 6:7, and it is translated into goodwill in this case. Now, the context of Ephesians 6:7 actually is the behavior of a servant to a master is what's being discussed there. And it's talking about, you know, do your service with goodwill is what's being discussed there. But it is a good verse. It does give us a little bit of a understanding of what that particular word means. But I wanted to talk about benevolence and what's going on at Grace Bible Church. I went to Webster's 1828 dictionary to make sure I understood what benevolence really meant. And they define it as the disposition to do good, an act of kindness, the love of mankind accompanied with a desire to promote their happiness, and it has charity in there. And so that kind of falls in line with what I wanted to talk about this morning. But the first thing I wanted to do is really look at it biblically and say, you know, is benevolence biblical? And if so, what is the role of the church in benevolence? What is the role of our church? What are we doing at GBC? And also, I want you to think about what is your role as well. Wanted to show you a chart that I made up because when you talk about is something biblical, that can take a lot of different directions. What does it mean that something is biblical? So I'm going to take the give to the needy as an example as I just quickly go through this. Is give to needy biblical? Giving to the needy. The first, this is a decision tree, by the way, and the first kind of thing you can think about there is, okay, does biblical mean it's in the Bible? Can you find anywhere in the Bible the concept of giving to the needy? I think you can find that, okay? The other option is it's not found anywhere. But the next thing, and I'm not going to go specifically through giving to the needy because I'm going to share some verses in a little bit, but the next thing that you can look at is it prescriptive? Or is the verses you find in there descriptive? And what I mean by that is, biblically speaking, when you find those verses, is it just giving examples of people giving? Or is there something that's prescribed? The next step is, if it is prescribed, then is it a principle or a command? And I won't get into the differences there, but I think hopefully you can follow that there is things that are prescriptive that are also commanded. And then the one that you know, when you're talking to people and you're sharing doctrine out of the Bible, the one thing about this decision tree is there's always an off-ramp that they can go off of if they really don't want to do what the Bible is saying. And so, you know, the next step after command, if it is a command, well, does it apply to me? You know, I'm dispensational, and we live in the time of grace, the dispensation of grace. That was for the Old Testament. This is not for me. And so that's the next step. Does it apply to me in this time in our society? And then, of course, the last step on my little decision tree is, am I going to be obedient to it or not? And if not, is that sinful? Is that what we call sinful? So I want you to try and keep this in your mind as I go through some of these verses real quickly this morning. And now, finally, we're to the focus passage. 1 John 3:16. I'm going to read from the New King James Version. It says that by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. So I wanted to point out that kind of middle verse there, which is verse 17, is definitely talking about the need and someone in need. And it's definitely talking about what our response should be to that. But what is the real topic, the real subject of these three verses? And the subject of these three verses in is love. And I want to point out that the word here is agape. It is agape love. And within these verses, it's saying this is love, and love is, well, what does it mean to lay down your life for your neighbor, for your wife, for your family, for your brethren in the church? Lord willing, we may not get the opportunity to physically give up our life for another believer, but there's other ways that we can serve them, and that we can lay down our life in that way. To kind of solidify where I'm going with this, I wanted to look at 1 Corinthians 13:13, and I actually am showing up on the screen three different translations. But it's interesting to note that the New King James Version says, but now faith, hope, love, again, it is agape in the original, New King James does translate that to love. Abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. King James Version actually says, and now abideth faith, hope, and charity. These three, but the greatest of these is charity. Now, both of these are correct in their translations in the sense that they're taking agape and they're trying to translate it into an English word that best describes what's being talked about in agape. And I'm pointing that out because if you look at down at the bottom there, I looked up agape in the King James Version. I said, okay, it exists in the Bible, and this says that it was translated 86 times into love and 29 times into charity. And so there's definitely a consistency there in the sense that it's the type of love we're describing here. And I want to try and point out that this love has in it the love for your brethren, and that love has built into it a concern, a compassion, and that can grow into a charity, a desire to take care of, to protect those around you, and that's what we're talking about here. I couldn't help but notice a couple of weeks ago when Jim was going over 1 Peter 2:17 that this verse says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. Honor all people, Jim did point out that that means to value all people. And so we're to place value. And when you place value on someone, you will have a concern for them. But then the next part says, love the brotherhood. Well, what does that mean? By the way, that is agape again. But what does it mean in this context to love the brotherhood? We're talking about the behavior of the Christian body. We're talking about the behavior of the church. What do we mean when we say that you are to love your brother? Is it to mean that you're going to miss them if they're to go out of town? It means you have a care for them. Another verse, I'm sorry I'm going through these quickly, James 2, 16 and 17, says, if a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? So there's a lot of words in the English language that we can use to describe, and benevolence is one of them that we are using here. But you know, it is a reminder that we're to have compassion, but also do something about it, to do what we can do. So, now, by the way, I do want to point out, sometimes all we can do is pray for our brother. Sometimes that's all we have, and that's all we can do. This is a bit longer set of verses, but I'll read this out of Deuteronomy 15, 7 through 9. It says, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need in whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of remission is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be sin in you. I liked this verse and brought it up. By the way, I'm gonna jump ahead real quick. I said there's 38 verses. I'm not really going to go through 38 of them, but I want to show you the others here. But I pulled this one out of Deuteronomy to show it for a couple of reasons. One, if you look at what's going on here and you understand what the year of remission is, I don't want you to look at it and go, oh, well, this is just talking about loaning or lending. But this is really talking about a person's heart. It points out and it says, beware that there is no base thought in your heart. Don't have it in your heart that oh, this is going to hurt you to lend this. The context of this is, you know, it's almost the seventh year when these loans are going to be forgiven. I can't really loan you anything because there's chances I'm not going to get anything back on this. And so this is really pointing to your heart. And I was really looking for a verse that would help us recognize that while benevolence definitely has a something to do, and it is a work, it's also God is always looking at our heart, and He's concerned about our heart. And so I wanted to bring that up. And then a set of verses that are almost always used when you talk about benevolence is Matthew 25, 34 through 46. And let me read that, and then I'll give some comments on it. It says, "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" Let me stop there for just a second. I want to point out the context of this. This is Jesus teaching, and it's talking about the end times. For those of us who have been going through the footsteps of the Messiah, you'll remember that we're talking about, and Jesus is talking about the end times. It says, let me continue. "For I was hungry, and you gave me food." Now this is Jesus talking. "I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Now he's talking to the righteous. And the righteous responded and said, "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?' And the king will answer and say to them, 'Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me.'" I found a quote from J. Vernon McGee, who of course puts it in the right context. He says, keep in mind, this is from being talked about the end times. He said, during these end times, it's going to be quite a feat when you offer even just a glass of water to another believer. He said, so don't take that simply when you read through that verse. John Walvoord says this. He says, "Works are presented here, but the works are not as the ground of salvation, but as the evidence of it. Same as in the sense of James 2:26, where it is declared, 'Faith without works is dead.' That is, it is not real faith unless it produces works." So what are the works that we're talking about in this this verse? It's talking about, you know, they gave food to those who were in need and who were hungry. And they gave drink to those that thirsty, and they clothed the naked, and they visited the sick, and they visited those that are in prison. And so these are is a good set of verses to look at and recognize that the Bible does teach, and Jesus himself teaches on what he considers the works of a righteous person. When you think about benevolence, it's interesting to look back at the history of benevolence. And you think of benevolent organizations, and you think of what type of benevolence has happened in our society. You've got hospitals, you've got poorhouses, and the care of orphans, the care of the aged, and care of the diseased. Looking at the history of these things, I'll even say, take a look at our Goodwill store that we have in almost every little town now. If you look back at the history of where this came from, it's pretty revealing. Following the first Council of Nicaea in 325, construction was began for a hospital in every cathedral town. In the 9th century, that was kind of reiterated when Emperor Charlemagne ordered that a hospital should be attached to each cathedral and monastery. If you look around at the hospitals, even kind of near our area, you got CTNC here, which is owned by Adventist Health Systems, which is part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Seton, as an example, was founded by the Daughters of Charity, which was a Catholic mission founded back in 1633. Even Scott and White Temple, you know, I looked them up. Of course, it's Dr. Scott and Dr. White, as you would expect. But they started with a partnership with an organization called the Temple Chapter of the International Order of the King's Daughters and Sons, which is defined as a benevolent society. It's actually an interdenominational Christian benevolent society. And when they first joined with them in that partnership, they actually started their first church in an abandoned Catholic convent. And so the point I'm making of it, well, let me go one more. Goodwill, which is, you know, we have got the store down here in town, in 1902 was actually started by Reverend Edgar J. Helms of Morgan Methodist Chapel in Boston. And he started it as a mission. Now, I'm not saying that all of those hospitals, all of those organizations today are necessarily totally Christian-minded and Christian mission-based. But what I'm trying to point out is it's only what's taught in the Bible that history has shown has led to these kind of actions to occur. It's our fathers and our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers that had this view of what Christian works was to be. And let's not forget that today for what are we going to leave our children and what are we doing for our society. So looking at benevolence, we talked about agape being a selfless, sacrificial love, such as the love Jesus Christ showed to all of humanity. We talked about having value for every individual and placing value on those individuals and having compassion for those in need. The Bible talks about acting kind to those in need, for doing good for others and to provide for those when they are in need. So whose responsibility is this? I was looking at it, you know, from the standpoint of the Bible's talking to you as individuals, but is it not also talking to the church as a whole? I wanted to look at what it means to the church. There's a verse here, Acts 2:42. I found where some people call this the purpose statement of the church, It says they were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. So this is the main purpose of the church in the book of Acts. But I also wanted to point out that by Acts 6, they're already establishing deacons. And what was the purpose of why were they establishing the deacons? Because they were already taking care of the needy. They understood the principle. They understood the command that was given by our Lord Jesus. So, to start to summarize here, are you known as someone people can approach to with their needs? And are you known as a person with compassion? And are you a doer? And is GBC, as a church, are we approachable when people have needs? Are we compassionate? And are we, as a church, doers? I wanted to end... though with pointing out a verse in Matthew 22:34-40. It says, then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, so they're asking Jesus, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said unto him, thou shalt agape the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And then he continued, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt agape thy neighbor as thyself. And so Jesus had the opportunity to point out to these Sadducees and these Pharisees that this is what is important, and this is what, from a command standpoint, I view as the two top priorities, I guess you'd say. So So what about GBC, and how does that relate to the little box in the back of the room here? I wanted to encourage some of you and to explain a little bit about what happens in the Benevolence Fund. So it's our goal at GBC to try and have on hand $2,000 in the savings account that we can help members of the church with when the need is known. The way that works is if we get up to $2,500 in that account, we'll take that $500 overage and we'll split that between two organizations. Right now, that is Options for Life, which is the pregnancy center in New Braunfels. We've talked a little bit, I think Jim talked a little bit about that a month or so ago. And then also Hays County Food Bank. I will tell you, I've been up here on a Sunday, you know, maybe between church and Awana, and the phone rings and you answer it. Jim and Lori deal with people calling up to the church that are in need all the time. And it is important that we try and help them where we can. And sometimes that includes, and I'm talking about non-members that are calling up asking for help. And so we're able to refer them to the Hays County Food Bank and do that often. And they're able to get help there besides just food. And so it's important that we support them as well. But I will tell you that our priority as a church is to try and support as much as we can outside Christian-based organizations when we can. Along those lines, I wanted to give you an update. In 2016, calendar year 2016, there was $3,223 given to the Benevolence Fund. And of that, we disbursed $4,492.80. The obvious question, how did we give more than we took in? Well, it's actually not obvious, but it's easy. We had a balance before the year started, so that's how that works out. We currently have a balance of, as of last week, we had a balance of $750. So we've been able to give in those givings $3,850 to families of this church when they've been in need in the year 2016. We also gave $342 to CTLC, which is who we were supporting at the time last year, and also $300 to the Hays County Food Bank. So I wanted to tell you that, to encourage you, I would say that is a good work that our church did, and I thank you very much for giving the deacon board the opportunity. I do want to point out that this is managed by the deacons. The deacons are the ones that need to be made aware when a need exists. So please, you know, grab a deacon if you know of a need, or if you have a need yourself, grab a deacon. I will tell you that the deacon will then take it to other deacons. We'll discuss it with the elders before any money is given out. But that's kind of how the process works. So it is a wonderful thing when we can help those in need. I also wanted to point out, I know that many of you support other organizations that are charity organizations, and that is wonderful. Don't stop doing that. That's what the Bible calls us to do. So continue doing that. All right. Yeah, I'm out of time. I know how this goes. You run out of time, don't you?